And you are tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's The Bike Show. This program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from City Bikes, a worker-owned, cooperatively-run, new and used bicycle sales and service shop with two locations on Southeast Ankeny near KBOO. Open 7 days a week for your biking commuting needs and online at citybikes.coop. And also by Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Here comes The Bike Show, today hosted by Christopher Delaney.
Good morning, everybody. It's a beautiful day to ride in Portland, Oregon. I'm Christopher Delaney. Welcome to the KBOO Bike Show, where we take an in-depth look at cycling and transportation as they affect our everyday lives. Today, my co-hosts Jocelyn Gowdy and I will speak with Leah Treat and Margie Bradway from the Portland Bureau of Transportation about their vision for Portland's future. Morning, Jocelyn.
Morning, Christopher. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing so well. I know you probably didn't know this, but I do want to take a quick moment and congratulate Jocelyn on her successful event last week. For those of you who don't know, Jocelyn organized the Rider Appreciation Day on North Williams. It was a really wonderful community event.
Thanks.
Could you tell us a bit about what excites you about organizing that event? And
yeah, absolutely. I think the big aspect of that event that is exciting is pulling the local business owners outside, allowing them to set up right there on the corner of the street, right beside the bike lane, so that they kind of experience what the cyclists are experiencing, which, you know, North Williams on a busy Wednesday afternoon commute home is a bit of a stressful environment. But their presence there, offering the cyclist little freebies or free bike tune-ups or a glass of water, even just those simple little gestures, it's really greatly appreciated. And it helps to connect, the cyclist that is their consumer market with the business owners, get a little face-to-face interaction, and they have the opportunity to invite them to come and visit their brick and mortars. So,
yeah, I really love the idea about how you're leading with gratitude. I think that's a fun model that I really wish more people would follow, and I hope it really spreads.
Yeah, gratitude and fun. It was just a big old bike party. So.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well done.
Thanks.
Today, I'm really excited. We have a great show for you guys today. Our first guest, Leah Treat, has completed her first year as the director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Treat has previously served as the managing deputy commissioner of the Chicago Department of Transportation and the deputy director for the Department of Transportation in the District of Columbia. Treat is very outspoken about ensuring safety for everyone who uses our transportation system. She's also outspoken advocate for improving health outcomes through changes in transportation. Leah is no stranger to the KBOO Bike Show. It's great to have you back on. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for asking me back.
Yeah, absolutely. Also joining us today is Margie Bradway. Bradway is the freshly appointed Active Transportation Division Manager for the Portland Bureau of Transportation. With a background in environmental science, Bradway has worked for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the National Wildlife Federation, the Natural Resource Division at the Oregon Department of Justice. After attending law school at Lewis and Clark College in Southwest Portland, she went on to become an environmental attorney and is well known for her work as the senior policy analyst for sustainability and active transportation at the Oregon Department of Transportation. So, Margie, congratulations on your new position and thanks for joining us on The Bike Show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
That's awesome. So before we get started today, I just wanted to have a casual conversation with you guys about your experience with the bicycle in the past and how you got to this point in your careers, being where you're at right now. So we'll start with Leah. Leah, do you remember your first bicycle?
I do. I had the most awesome Schwinn electric blue Stingray. It had the big banana seat. It had the ape hanger handlebars. It had the really cool white tassels hanging off of it.
And I dressed
it up with the playing cards and the clothespins on the spokes in the back so it would like click.
Make noises.
As I went down the street. It was pretty awesome, and I thought it was really cool on that bike. So
that's awesome. What was your most memorable experience with that bicycle?
Unfortunately, a really bad crash. When I started riding a bike without training wheels between the age of 4 and 5, and this was in the days before helmets, and a group of us went over to the local elementary school to ride around the parking lot and do races, and there was a parking median in the middle, and I was taking a turn too fast and clipped a curb and went over my handlebars and hit the curb concrete with my head. It ended up in the ER getting 5 stitches over my left eye. Bummer. But I was back on my bike.
Yeah, it didn't deter you.
No, it didn't deter me. I just learned, to take corners a little easier.
Dang. So fast forward a little bit. How did you get interested in working in transportation? What was the motivation there?
It's a really interesting question because it's not my background or my training. So it's really a mix of luck and really hard work early on in my career. So my background is in finance and budgeting, and I have spent the majority of my life or my career life working in budgeting and finance. And I was working in the District of Columbia. I had been recruited by then Mayor Anthony Williams as he was leading the district out of the control board area and moving the district away from the legacy of Marion Barry. And there were a lot of really young, inexperienced, but talented people who had the opportunity to work in the District of Columbia, and I happened to be one of them. This was in part due to recruiting issues because the district was seen as not a place that was, a professional, like where you wanted to go in your career to work for the District of Columbia. But I also think it's due to the foresight of Mayor Anthony Williams at the time, who recognized that bringing in new young talent was going to be a part of the story of the rebirth of the nation's capital. So
it's come a long way.
It has come a really long way. And I literally poured blood, sweat, and tears into that city and am very proud of the work that I did there. But I moved into transportation while working at the District of Columbia. So Dan Tangerlini, who's now the head of GSA under President Obama, was also working for Mayor Williams. And he had been tapped to break out the transportation department from the Public Works Department so we could create a state agency. And he asked me to come work for him. And I didn't know anything about transportation, but I knew about transportation finance, and he knew that that was the way that the agency was going to stand up, get more money, and start doing rebuilding the city and doing more creative, different things. So he took a chance on me, and I figured if he was crazy enough to ask me to do it, I was crazy enough to say yes. So I went to work for him as his finance manager, and that was in 2005, and it started laying the groundwork for where I am today.
Awesome. One of the things that I'm curious about, we're glad to have you here in Portland. What were your first thoughts when we got offered the job here in Portland?
I was completely stunned and equally excited. I know that there were, it was a very large pool of candidates. They were extremely qualified and very competitive. And the process that I went through to get this job was grueling, to say the least, but I am absolutely thrilled to have been given the position, and I wake up every day excited to have this job, and I wake up every day committed to the value of loving Portland and doing my job to the best of my abilities, because I just think this is such an amazing city.
That's awesome. What's so great about the city to you guys, for you and your family? What's something that you can do here that you haven't really been able to do anywhere else, or be, really?
We have the ability to own one car that we hardly ever drive. It's only on the weekends to get out of town if we want to go to the coast or to the mountains is when we use our car. But other than that, we do everything by walking and biking. So it's been really freeing for us, and it's been great for our kids to have that sort of connection to nature and the outdoors and not be so dependent on a car and strapped in a car seat all the time to get around and see things and explore.
Have you guys, what's the most memorable experience you've had as a family getting around outside of the automobile?
Sunday Parkways.
Yeah.
I absolutely love Sunday Parkways.
Yeah, totally.
So it's this, I absolutely love Sunday Parkways, and it's a great way to share with my family what I do for a living, so my kids get to see firsthand what I'm trying to do and the vision for the city in terms of creating livable spaces, play spaces, and seeing roads not just as throughput, you know, asphalt, but also a place where we can play and come together as a community and do things outdoors together. So it helps them understand what I do, which is a great connection to have with my kids because I don't get to see them a lot because I'm working a lot.
Do they enjoy riding bikes?
They love riding bikes.
That's what we like to hear.
And if I can, I'd love to give a shout out to the community cycling center because both of my kids, my older sons, took camps there this summer and they did such an amazing job, and my kids have gone so much further on their bicycle after going through those camps. But they ride their bikes every day. I get up every morning at 7:30 and ride with my oldest son down to Dishman Community Center to drop him off for swim lessons.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
So we're doing everything by bike. We're buying our groceries by bike. We go to the doctor by bike, and just everything that we do every day.
Yeah, so how does that experience that you've had, you know, being here for a year, how does that compare to what you thought it was going to be?
Well, I actually thought that we would be in the car more. I didn't really think it was as attainable to do as many things by bike that you can. We did not show up with cargo bikes here. We just each had our own individual bikes, and we quickly learned that if, you know, there's such proximity with all the local neighborhood businesses that if you have a bike and a good pannier or a cargo bike and throw the kids on it, and you can go to a local business and get what you need within really short distance, and it's
totally.
It's a lot more fun than getting behind the wheel and driving somewhere to pick something up.
That's awesome. So you've just completed your first year at the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Maybe give us a little retrospective. What has that been like for you professionally? And let's see, you know, maybe biggest success, challenge, or opportunity that you faced?
Yeah, so I actually, there's many, many successes that we've had over the last year that I don't think have been celebrated enough, and I really owe gratitude to the amazing team that I inherited at PBOT because they really delivered on many successes. And the most important, I think, in terms of public trust and delivering on a commitment that both the mayor and the commissioner made was the 100-mile goal of preventative maintenance on our streets. And we exceeded that by over 4 miles. And that was really so much public attention was put on that. So I'm really proud of our crews and our staff for accomplishing that. But on top of that, there's so many other things that we've done inside the Bureau that I think that are worth mentioning. We passed new disabled parking regulations, which from what I understand, there had been several attempts for many years to try to get this done. We finally got the political support to get that passed council, which has now increased access for the disability community in downtown, but it's also created the turnover for businesses that they need from those the parking spaces being freed up.
Yeah, totally.
We have created an equity advisory committee within our agency that is helping us guide our decisions in terms of how we spend our money, what projects we select, and to ensure that we are fairly distributing both our opportunities and burdens across the city. And I think that's a really important conversation that we need to have as a bureau. So I'm proud of the work that they have done. We also, with unanimous council support, passed the Foster Road streetscape. So from Southeast Powell to 90th, we're adding streetscape improvements, but we're also adding bike lanes. I think that was a huge win for us. And we also restriped Division from 60th to 80th, taking it from 2 travel lanes in each direction down to 1 and
that's
adding
awesome.
Bike
yeah, yeah.
lanes.
Well, that's quite a list of accomplishments. I really want to congratulate you on that. No, it's
year one.
If we could go on that all day, we would. But I want to give some time to Margie as well. Let's go back to the beginning. Margie, do you remember your first bicycle? Maybe a memorable experience that you had with that?
Funny enough, my first bicycle was also a Schwinn with a big banana seat. It was purple and had the big mustache handlebars and the little lavender tassels. I don't remember any clip-in cards on mine, but I do remember the lavender tassels. Mm-hmm. And in terms of my memory with it, I had a friend, I must have been 6 or 7, but my friend's name was Adele, and she lived down the street. And I remember the very day my parents said it was okay that I could ride my bike alone to Adele's house. And that feeling of freedom that I had on my bike riding on this bumpy road to my best friend's house. That was a really good memory.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about your professional journey as an environmental attorney. Maybe how you got motivated to get involved in that, what experience led you to that career path, and, you know, a little bit about your journey up until now through ODOT and the different organizations that you worked for.
Sure. I have an undergrad. I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and I studied in Michigan at Michigan State. Go Spartans. And I really was interested in the connection between environmental and health. I actually studied it, took several health classes as well as natural resource classes. And so my step after that was to go to Washington, D.C. and be one of the many, many lackeys fresh out of college at, lobbying and doing government relations work. So I worked for National Wildlife Federation, and there I saw kind of firsthand the power of policy and the power of politics, and working in Washington, D.C., what I hadn't really realized before. And that motivated me to go to law school, and I came to Lewis and Clark. I guess it's been almost 15 years now, maybe 16, so quite a while ago, and studied environmental law. And through the course of working on environmental law there, I worked at the Department of Justice on water quality issues, brownfield issues, EPA. My focus was on environmental justice and equity issues, bringing in the health piece and toxics. And then after law school, I got the opportunity to work in the private sector at the largest firm in Oregon called Stoll Reeves. And that was a change for me because I was essentially doing corporate law. And I learned really good lessons, kind of like Leah. I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in my career at that point. I worked really hard, but after kind of that 5 years of working hard, and I think having huge accomplishments in terms of winning cases, I kind of had to ask myself the hard question of, am I happy? Is this what I want to take my career? And my mentor at Stoll Reeves was Gail Ackerman, who at the time was attorney at Stoll Reeves, but also the chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission. She's since passed, but she was an amazing leader in both environment and in transportation. So she said to me, well, you should think about transportation. After all, you know, you bike to work every day. You walk wherever you go. I know you, and I know you care about these issues. So I tried it. And I much like Lee, I didn't have a background in it, but I had the policy background and the environmental and the health piece. So I started working in the director's office at ODOT. And when I first started, my task was kind of fairly small. It was define what's climate change, right? It was 2006 when that conversation was going on. Help us with air toxics. Help us think about biodiesel and electric vehicles and the way we run business. And so as I started to think about a sustainable transportation system and build up that program, and ODOT was the first in the nation to have a sustainability program, it naturally leads you to this kind of conclusion that you need a more multimodal sustainable transportation system. You can't have a sustainable transportation system without having true options for the other modes. So I became a little bit of a bug in the ear of Director Matt Garrett and Gail at the time, saying, what can we do to strengthen our bike ped program? What can we do to strengthen transit and other modes? And my portfolio started growing, and I started working on, you know, larger livability issues, health issues, and eventually Matt and others, Jerry Bohard and planning, kind of just hand me the reins on the bike ped policy and said, you know, help us shape a program here. So I worked the past 2 years focusing at ODOT a huge amount of my time on bike and pedestrian issues to make a sustainable transportation system.
And you're kind of famous here in Portland for for riding your bike to Salem. How often did you do that?
Well, I used to do it actually during the bike commute challenge. I did it once, three times in 1 week, but most normally I would do it Wednesdays. And this is, I say it
every week.
Well, I had kids, so that, and I was pregnant for, 2 years out of the past 4 years. So that put a little bit of a kink in that.
Were you still riding while pregnant?
Yeah, actually, I rode to work. I actually went to the, this is kind of embarrassing, but I went to the gym, rode my bike there, rode my bike to work, and then delivered a baby that evening for both my pregnancies.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing.
So I rode up to the very end of both my pregnancies. I have a maternal cycle. It's this awesome bicycle that Eric Tonkin and my husband built for me.
No way.
That has big handlebars and really low gears and ride, and I rode that thing through both my pregnancies. But
that's an incredible story.
Yes, but going back to Salem, then I did do that for a while. So, anyway.
Cool. Well, you're listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland and worldwide at www.kboo.fm. Please stay with us for the second half of our show, where you'll hear Leah Treat and Margie Bradway discuss their vision for the future of transportation in Portland, also an exclusive unveiling of their plan to get us there. Don't touch that dial.
I've got my bicycle.
Tuned into the KBOO Bike Show. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Leah Treat and Margie Bradway from the Portland Bureau of Transportation about their vision for the future of transportation in Portland. You can follow us on Twitter at KBOOBike or join the conversation live by using the hashtag Vision4PDX. That's Vision4PDX. So in the second half of the show here, we really want to talk about, let's paint a picture for your vision for Portland. The ideal, what does it look like? What does it look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Before we get into the current state of things, I really want to know where we're going, for us to really be motivated to push through, to show up when it's difficult. Where are we headed?
Well, you know, some recent research has come out that shows that over the next decade or two, that Portland's population is going to be growing by more than 200,000 people. In the metro region, it's expected to grow by over 700,000 people. And if you combine those figures with data that's showing people are living longer lives, people are choosing to age in place, and that livable cities are really the draw for populations, we need to be investing in alternative modes in order to sustain the growth that's coming our way. And that growth, in order to sustain it, is going to have to include cycling, walking, transit, and even carpooling. So the city has a sustainability goal of 75% of its commuters using one of these alternative transportation modes by 2035.
Sure.
It's a really ambitious goal, but I think it's achievable for the metro region, and I think Portland can do it. And I also think it's a goal that everyone can get behind. The businesses, they need less congested roads to get their goods to market, and residents need better options to get to their meet their daily needs other than getting behind a wheel. So the cost of a car with associated insurance costs and gas and the sticker price of a car, we need to be giving people better options to be able to live affordably in the city, as well as reducing congestion because of population growth. And I also think that there's not a lot more that could be better for our overall economy than to get people out of their cars. The federal government spends 75% of its budget on healthcare alone. So if you think about getting people healthier, and being able to redirect some of that money to different things, if you can think about the stuff that we could be investing in other than health insurance for a chronically diseased population.
Absolutely. What, Margie, do you have a take on that as well?
Well, yeah, and just to play off Leah's last point, now that I have children, I think about my children's future, and you know, one third of children in America are obese. And the statistics show that their opportunity to play and actually move continues to decrease overall. And really, for a future for our children, we have to create a place where they can play, and as well as, you know, bike and walk to school and to where they want to go. And I think I've shifted from being maybe one of those riders who's more confident to an interested but concerned when I'm carrying my two young children
Absolutely,
on the back
yeah.
of the bike. And so that really, every place I ride now, I ask myself, would I ride with my two-year-old on this street? And that's the standard that, you know, we should hold ourselves to now and in the future.
And one thing we don't talk about is that it's not a binary. You're not in the confident category forever. You know, one thing about, you know, Roger's categories there is that depending on who's with you? You know, maybe if I'm riding with my wife or if I'm riding with my mother-in-law or my children, I might be in a different category than I normally would ride. And I think that's true when we cast the vision for the city. You know, it's like Peñalosa says, we want the 8 to 80 vision. You know, is an 8-year-old comfortable riding their bike in this facility? Is an 80-year-old comfortable riding their bike on that facility? I kind of hear you guys saying that as the general vision for the future. So, with that said, how would you describe the current state of transportation in Portland? You know, what's our current reality?
Well, from my perspective, no pun intended, we're kind of at a crossroads. So I believe that Portland remains the most progressive city in the country with regards to transportation. But, you know, we're in this environment of dwindling resources that are bumping up against competing demands and aging infrastructure. And it's becoming harder and harder to invest in alternative choices without sparking modal wars, which are just so detrimental to the conversation.
And by modal wars, what do you mean by that?
Pitting cars against bikes, against transit, against pedestrians, and how you spend so much money, as Commissioner Novick calls it, the golden bike lane for the yuppies, which it's really not. So those kinds of conversations are incredibly detrimental to the future of the city and how we choose to spend our money and how we make choices and resource allocation. We have a proud tradition in Portland of building for sustainability and building for growth, and I'm confident that the metro region will continue along that path, but it's becoming harder to get those decisions broadly made in a consensus fashion.
Why is that, you think?
I think there's dwindling, it's the dwindling resources, you know, the federal government. We just patched the transportation bill. We don't have a long-term funding solution. So it's really difficult to make long-term investments when you don't know where your money is coming from.
And you say that that would trickle down.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, one thing that I, you know, my first 2 weeks on the job have really noticed right away is, you know, well, I think I'm trying to kind of answer your question as well as kind of this question of has Portland kind of plateaued or stalled on its progress for biking and walking, right?
A lot of people seem to be saying that.
Yeah, and what, you know, my first impression is it's not for lack of political will or plans on the shelf when it comes to PBOT. There, we have a great bike plan. We have a very visionary leader in Leah. We have visionary leaders in our mayor and our commissioner. I think there's the political will is there. I think that the good thinking and the plans are there. We have extremely bright thinkers around this issue and PBOT and staff, but there's really not much money. And that's hard. We have the plans for all the neighborhood greenways. If I had the budget, I'd do it right. You know, if I could, I think neighborhood greenways really speak to that interested but concerned user. But we have a plan sitting on the shelf right now because that program has not been funded. So we can also I just on the plateau, are we okay? Do you want to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and on that plateau question, I think There's also kind of a perception, right? We just had a gentleman come in from out of town from the American Bicycle League of Cyclists who came here and said, actually, you guys are kind of hard on yourself. Yeah, Portland's a pretty great place to bike, right? I mean, that was his overall assessment. And that's okay, because I think Portlanders have come to expect a higher standard.
They have high expectations.
That's good. That's a good thing,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
So my mother from Detroit will look at Powell and say, well, that's how a street looks, right? But a Portlander looks at Powell and says, no, we can do better.
Absolutely.
And that's not a bad thing. I think that the public is pushing us, PBOT, and everyone in the transportation field to think higher and have a bigger vision. So I appreciate the commentary along that line.
And I think sometimes people, they don't know the story per se. They don't know the conversations that go on behind closed doors and the difficulty, like you guys are saying about the funding issue. A lot of people don't understand where that is right now and how we got to that point. And so, you know, they have those high expectations, but they don't see the challenges as well. And that's one thing that I really want to discuss is, let's tell that story. How did we get to this point? What are the factors that led to our current reality, you know, so that we know where we've been? In that sense, either of you guys could respond to that.
Go ahead. There's many, many roads that have led to where we are today, but there's a few main pieces to it that are really important to understand. One is that gas taxes have not kept up with inflation. So at the federal level and at the state level, where it's the majority of our funding at the Bureau of Transportation, where we get our discretionary dollars to spend on the kinds of innovative things that we want to do, those dollars, those taxes haven't kept pace with inflation. And at the meantime, asphalt prices are going up, concrete, steel, et cetera, all the things that we need to do to build our infrastructure, the costs have increased. So we don't have a funding source that's kept pace with our costs.
And did it ever? Was it ever indexed to inflation?
No, the federal gas tax was, last time it was raised was in 1993. So if you can think of anything that costs the same price today as it did in 1993, that would be a great challenge for somebody. They could find something, but I can't think of anything, and it was not indexed to inflation.
And what about the state?
And the state, it is not indexed to inflation. I don't know when it was done, but the last gas tax increase was
Well,
can you answer that one, Margie?
With the Jobs and Transportation Act, it was raised in 2011, I believe. 2010, 2011 was a Jobs and Transportation Act around that time. But it was a small increase, and it by no means made up for the gap of those years. I believe it was 6%. Yeah.
So there's a really important conversation that Congressman Blumenauer is having on the Hill, and he's, you know, fighting an uphill battle to, one, raise the gas tax at the federal level by 15 cents, and he's also trying to push vehicle miles traveled as a way of capturing revenue from car use. And I think the 2015 legislative agenda for the state of Oregon is going to include a 5-cent gas tax that's being discussed as well. So
Absolutely.
That will... Out of that 5 cents, though, the city of Portland will get less than $1.5 million annually from that increase, which is just a drop in the bucket of our needs.
So is there a lot of support for that? I mean, within the Oregon legislature and within the at the national level as well. I mean, who do you see rallying around those ideas with the congressman?
That's a really...
You know, it's really interesting to me because both in... You know, Representative Reed, there's Democratic leadership in our state as well as Democratic leadership in Congress has taken up this issue. And I think it's fascinating that transportation funding and even highway trust fund funding has become somewhat of a partisan issue. But they are pushing for that. And a lot of the pushback on any potential funding package is just a tax increase. And that's all I can really say about it. But I think that, you know, there is a trend, and I think this is Leo was getting at, of kind of there's a trend nationally for the federal government to kind of step back and let local governments step up and fund everything from environmental cleanup to health care to transportation. And it's providing a huge burden on local governments.
Mm-hmm.
There's a benefit to it because it means that we would be able to shape that money how we wanted without FHWA regulations in the case of transportation. But the downside is we have a huge burden to do the fundraising on our, you know, through the tools that we have.
And the shortfall seems to be that it wasn't that way in the past, and it is that way now. And so the local governments need time to make that transition. It's not necessarily, it may or may not be a negative thing for the future, but... It would be unreasonable to say, hey, we've been giving you lots of money, we've been doing your fundraising, we've been giving you lots of support, now it's your turn to do it on your own, and they flip the switch, and you know, I can see where that would be definitely challenging from a local government standpoint.
Yeah.
It is, you know, but we were at a forum on Monday with Congressman Blumenauer on the future of transportation and how to fund it. And in talking with him, he said that when he was on the city council back in the late 80s, early 90s, that he was having the conversation then about resources not keeping up with infrastructure needs. So I don't really know that it's a new conversation. It's just become a lot louder because of the lack of investment.
Gotcha.
Hasn't kept pace with the need. And so infrastructure becomes exponential. More expensive to fix the longer you let it decline. I also think one of the things that happened in Portland that has led us to where we are is the annexation of East Portland. It wasn't adequately funded, and there was a responsibility for the city to take over that take over East Portland, and it came along with it. Dozens of miles of unpaved roads, hundreds of miles of missing sidewalks, and some of the most dangerous roads we have in the city. And that's an equity issue for the city, and it's also a funding issue. And while people are very intently focused on addressing that problem, we don't have the resources to adequately address it.
When did that happen?
I don't actually know when that happened. It was well before I got here. In the
1980s?
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
And so, you know, I guess that coupled with the decrease in funding, you know, by having things not indexed to the gas tax, what other sources of revenue currently do we have?
Well, that's it. We have the gas tax revenue, and the money that we generate from parking meters are really our discretionary funds. Interestingly, we used to have the utility licensing fees that came to the city, used to fund transportation. And many years ago, I don't know exactly when, but before I got here, there was experiencing a deficit in the general fund to fund police, to fund fire and housing. And so the utility licensing funds were redirected from transportation to the general fund to cover those shortfalls. And if we had the utility license fees sitting in our budget now, it would be $65 to $70 million annually, and would go a long way towards addressing our problems. And there is actually a real direct nexus between the source of those fees and then their use in transportation. But I do understand, you know, if you redirect money from the general fund to the Portland Bureau of Transportation, all we're doing is creating a deficit somewhere else. But
right.
It's disappointing that that decision was made. I understand why it was made, but I know there's a lot of lingering disappointment among our constituency about that decision.
Yeah, and that I just wanted to add, you know, one thing I've been looking at my first couple of weeks on the job is the Active Transportation Division's budget. And it's just kind of mind-blowing to me how, I mean, to get biking and walking done in the division, we just have to literally beg and borrow for money. I mean, we've got PBOT staff mm-hmm. at Sunday Parkways holding up cans saying, please support us.
Wow.
And these are smart, you know, talented professionals who literally just go around saying, please, you know, help us get Sunday Parkways off the ground. The funding for Active Transportation Division from the general budget has continues to go down. We've lost over $1.5 million over the
past
3 years.
Do you know what percentage it is? Offhand, it's okay if you don't.
I don't want to go.
It's less than 2%.
Okay. The Active Transportation Division budget is less than 2%.
Okay.
I mean, it's minuscule. And we have amazing, like I said, some of the best thinkers and creative ideas of everybody from Greg Reisman to Roger Geller doing all these things on shoestrings. I mean, just there's nothing there mm-hmm. in terms of the budget. And it really breaks my heart. And I will go back begging for money again next year.
Lee, I wanted to ask, you keep mentioning discretionary budget. What's the difference between discretionary and non-discretionary, and how does that play out for funding projects specific to bike and ped?
We have several different sources of funding. The main source of funding is a federal highway administration that gives grants that come to the state, and then they flow down to the metro region, and then we compete for them throughout the region. We also get a certain amount of money from federal highway administrations to do basic bridge repair and improvement and roadway improvements. But those all have specific strings attached. And then we also get grants that we apply for that if we can come up with 10 or 20% match. We have a large amount of grants in our budget, but those are for very specific projects and can only be used on very specific things. And we have intergovernmental agreements with other agencies that represent probably about $30 million in our budget. So the Bureau of Environmental Services funds us to do sewer repair for the city. We can't spend that money on anything else. And so if you go down and if you go through our $300 million budget, which seems like this really large pot of money, once you start going through everything that is mandatory, can't be diverted, has to go to a debt repayment, is already dedicated to something else, we have less than $50 million that are actually discretionary for us to make decisions with. So it's a very small pot of money for
and
the amount of
work.
And
that's to be used across all modes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, I think we've accurately described the reality of the situation. I want to spend a big chunk of time here talking about solutions. How do we get from here to there? You know, we talked about the vision. We talked about the current reality. I really want to know the details, the plans. What are we going to do? And then eventually, I want to discuss for our listeners, too, how they can get involved in as well and support you guys. They can show their support for different projects that they want and other things. But first, let's talk about the plan.
I think everyone is aware of the street fee that we have been working really hard. The mayor and Commissioner Novick have been working since January to try to get some sort of a street fee passed. We continue to do that work. We have four different advisory committees looking at different functions and angles of that package. There's a business advisory group, there's a low-income nonprofit group, and then there's a residential group. And one of the things that is really important, I think, especially for the listeners of the KBOO Bike Show to hear, is that there is a real divide among these advisory groups about how the money should be spent. And the business advisory group wants to see the overwhelming majority, if not all of the money spent on road maintenance. And I understand that there are concerns and that they're interested in throughput and goods to market and that they look at road investments on an ROI. Like if you can spend less now to, you know, build a better road, that's how you should be spending your money. But they don't necessarily believe that there's a constituency out there who is concerned about safety and is really passionate about alternative modes. And so when you ask, how do we get involved? I thank you for asking that question, because we need our friends, our activists, our concerned citizens to be surrounding this issue. They need to be vocal. They need to be writing the council members, not just the mayor and Novick. They're already on board. All of the council needs to understand that people care about safety. They care about biking. They care about walking. They care about elders getting to transit stops. They care about children being able to walk to school, because I'm frankly concerned about how the money is going to get split up if the advocates don't stand up and make themselves heard in this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, do we have any specifics about the details on any of that?
Well, I want to speak just to use this opportunity to talk about safety a little bit and Leah's Vision Zero, because one of the proposals, at least as I understand it, again, my first is 2 weeks on the job, is really to use a large portion of that funding for safety. And Leah's vision, PBOT's vision for Vision Zero, which basically means that one more death on the transportation system is too many. In 2013, 36 people were killed in traffic. That's twice the amount of homicides that happened in Portland. When I was working at ODOT, I was working close with the Oregon Health Authority, and they considered vehicle crashes or all transportation crashes and deaths a global epidemic, because the rate of death is so much higher than other rates of death caused by things that we typically look at, like heart disease and cancer.
And it's not talked about in the same way at all.
It should be. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an epidemic.
It cost the state of Oregon in 2012 $422 million was the cost to the state of Oregon for traffic fatalities and serious injuries in the year 2012.
And beyond that,
it's a huge number.
It's a huge number.
And a huge impact on the community of those lives lost.
Exactly. I mean, that's how I look at it. Is that these are neighbors. These are our kids. These are our moms and dads. You know, these are people. So that has to be taken seriously. And it has to be a priority. I think PBOT has the tools. There, we have a high crash corridor program. There's been a ton of studying done. There's a lot of plans, but we need funding to put in everything from hawk signals to traffic calming and proven things that have been proven to work. We know they work. We just need the support and funding to get that done, and I believe we can get that number of 36 lower.
We also are working on a two-year plan for the agency, and we were going to be unveiling in October, November at the latest. So we have done a great amount of work of talking to all of our stakeholders in the community, as well as neighborhood advisory groups, business advisory groups, and we have come up with some guiding principles for PBOT over the next 2 years that we're going to be operating under, and they are five main themes, which are preserve what we have built and operate it well. We're going to be building a future where everyone can grow and thrive. We're going to be responsible stewards of our city assets, and we're going to contribute to the health and vitality of our people and our planet. And so these five guiding principles are now being turned into actionable items for each of our groups, and we're going to come up with performance metrics of the things that we're going to deliver under those five themes over the next 2 years. We're going to put up a public dashboard to measure our progress against our stated goals, so the public can engage in what we're doing and see how we are progressing and pushing the needle in these areas. And these five themes, these are what we mean when we say getting back to the basics, I've had people ask me a lot, you know, what does it really mean when you say you're getting back to the basics? And to me, it means that we're attending to and renewing the foundation on which Portland was built. We're delivering a transportation system that serves a larger social, economic, and environmental objectives. And we mean improving condition of our streets and improving condition of the people who use them. And we're investing in maintenance and we're investing in mobility. And I mean action on this, and I mean to make progress over the next 2 years and look forward to the continued conversation and dialogue.
Yeah, totally. Does the public have any input into the types of projects that get put into that two-year plan or recommending projects?
Absolutely. So we have several advisory committees already that serve. We have a bicycle advisory committee, a pedestrian advisory committee. We have a freight advisory committee. We've just taken over the regulatory division, so they oversee taxis and pedicabs and things like that. And we have advisory committee. But we also, should the street fee be realized, we have a huge working group that is helping us determine what projects are going to get picked out of that funding as well. So if people want to be more involved in how those projects are selected, they need to show up to our meetings.
Anybody show up to that?
They are open and everything is available online at ourstreetspdx.com. So every advisory committee that we have is open to the public, and that is where all of the discussions are happening right now and how decisions are being made. So I invite people to please show up and make your voice heard.
And do people have a opportunity to speak at those meetings, or is it just a listening piece as well?
They have been speaking, so there's very few people have shown up, but the ones that have inserted themselves in the conversation and are welcome to join in.
Awesome.
And I'll just add, and this is kind of where I'm still wearing a part of maybe my old ODOT hat, hasn't completely come off yet, that there's through the federal funding flows through ODOT and then is put in what we call the STIP, the Statewide Transportation
Improvement Plan.
And I'm trying hard not to use acronyms, sorry. And there's a lot of opportunities to get involved in that as well. The areas commissions on transportation, very similar to JPACT in the metro area, does a project selection for that. Mm-hmm. Portland competes for those. Portland also competes in other funding pots like Connect Oregon, and very important, another statewide pot that goes towards alternative modes. So there's tons of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So let's take, for example here, the Area Commission on Transportation that you mentioned, commonly referred to as the ACTS.
Right.
How many of those are there? How are they divided? How is that organized? If someone wanted to have input on that process, what would they do?
Well, the ACTS were actually the brainchild of the late Gail Ackerman. And her idea was that ODOT would pull together committees in different areas of the state. There's quite a few. I want to say there's maybe 10 or 12. I don't know exactly. But there's kind of the Northwest Coast, the Southern Coast, Southern Oregon, Eastern Oregon. There's several. And they pull together people, a lot of times elected officials, as well as modal representatives. So someone representing freight, someone representing bike ped. In some areas, they even have a health representative on the committee.
Isn't that also mandated by the governor, that you have a multimodal individual on the...
It's actually a request of the... I wouldn't say it's a mandate, but it was a request of the Oregon Transportation Commission, the OTC.
Sure.
Not necessarily the governor, but the OT, they're all connected, of course. And they really weigh in on the projects. So how it works is the local governments, as well as ODOT and their own projects, kind of bring forward in the form of applications all of their projects. And then each of those lists are vetted at the Area Commission of Transportation, and it's a vetting process, and it's a multimodal process. What's really important for the KBOO audience to know is that funding sources for bike ped used to be more siloed. They used to be in these buckets called the State Bike Ped Grant and the Transportation Enhancements bucket. And so now they're combined with all the other modes and they have to compete. So bike ped projects compete neck and neck with streetcar and highway and bridges. And so Last year was really the first year that happened, and it actually worked. I think Bikeped competed fairly well amongst other modes, but there's always kind of a concern, or not a concern, but there's always opportunity, I think, to hear from the constituents that live in each of that area. Mm-hmm. So if you are in the Portland area, you would essentially go online, ODOT, and see when the Act for the Portland Area is meeting. And there is a website where they can all meet. And then anyone can show up and provide public testimony. You can also write the Transportation Commission as well as the head of the Area Commissions on Transportation.
Mm-hmm. And that's a meaningful contribution because you can potentially sway what projects get accepted. I mean,
absolutely.
And proposed,
it's
like
Leah said, these types of, I wouldn't say grants, but these application-based processes are really a huge part of PBOT's budget that we rely on.
And highly competitive.
Sure. There, you know, I will say, from putting my PBOT hat on, switching and putting my PBOT hat on, is that what I've noticed is as these funding streams kind of get conglomerated, what I call kind of the bigger and sexier projects rise to the top. And so that means that these bigger modernization projects or something like Selwood Bridge would compete very well. But the sidewalk infill project in East Portland doesn't. And that's a problem. That's an equity issue. Mm-hmm. So we have to figure out, and that's where our streets fee comes in, because we have to figure out how to get kids to school. We have to figure out how to make those meaningful connections. The bike lane to nowhere, we have to make that bike lane go to somewhere.
So we've got about 1 minute left. Anything you guys want to wrap up with, encouragement to the audience, invitations to contribute or how folks can get involved, and maybe 30 seconds each, you guys can share a little bit about, what your vision for engagement is with our listeners.
I again reiterate, go to ourstreetspdx.com, check out all the materials that we have that we're currently using for the conversation we have with our advisory committees about how we're going to move forward. We are looking at a November vote, so it's fast and furious. I don't think we're having more town halls. So this is being done through committees that are open to the public, so please become informed about how people are making decisions on how the money will be raised, one, and two, how it will be spent. And all of that sits on our website, and from there you can get engaged. And I always welcome people to reach out to me personally and to my staff for any issues and concerns.
Awesome. And Morgan?
I would say show up at your neighborhood association, show up at your school, ask for safe routes to school, come to Sunday Parkway, show your support for that, get involved with your neighborhood, because there's a lot of decisions made at that level, and your voice needs to be heard.
Yeah, thank you so much, and we're really excited to hear about this two-year plan. I can't wait to dig into that, read more about it, and hope that you guys would come back and visit at the KBOO Bike Show at some later point in time and dig into that a little bit more for our audience as well. That'd be wonderful.
We would love to.
Great.
Absolutely. Well, thank you to our guests, Leah Treat and Margie Bradway from the Portland Bureau for Transportation, for joining us today on the show and sharing their vision for the future of transportation in Portland. It's been a pleasure to have both of you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You.
It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. We're on the air the first Wednesday of every month at 11 a.m. Our show is podcast and archived at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. You can also find our most recent episodes free on iTunes and on the KBOO website at kboo.fm. Special thanks to Portland Transport and Chris Smith for hosting and engineering the podcast. This program is hosted and organized by Tori Bortman, Jocelyn Gowdy, Alon Robb, and myself, Christopher Delaney. A huge thanks to our magical in-studio engineer, Tammy Dean, without whom we would be fumbling through the airspace. Get out there and ride your bikes, folks.
Something very strange I hear you say. You're talking in a most peculiar way. But something really threw me. Yesterday, he don't know just where it done. He don't really care at all. No one's sure just what it was.
And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW and by Portland Saturday Market, from our hands to yours. Celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. Thanks for tuning in to the Bike Show today. We have a couple of announcements, and then, you know, let's finish up with this music, and then we'll get to the new news headlines, which are going to precede Jazz Lives. Nick is here to bring you great jazz in just a minute. Or 5 minutes after the noon has headlines.
It's really rather trippy, but something also trippy. Something happened to me yesterday.
It's KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, June 4th, 2014. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, on Monday, Hilton Hotels announced plans to open a high-end boutique hotel in downtown Portland. No site was announced, but the hotel's developer bought the site of the former Pendleton Woolen Mills headquarters at Southwest Jefferson Street last year. City Development has seen plans for a half-block site that includes 300 hotel rooms, 24 apartments, and some retail space. The hotel will be 23 stories tall.
A number of California counties have stopped holding inmates for immigration agents. They are citing a federal court ruling that found an Oregon county liable for damages after it held an inmate after her release date. The California counties are among 100 municipalities across the U.S. who have stopped the practice since the ruling.
A federal court has ruled that California's treatment of mentally ill prisoners is haphazard and inadequate. Doctors discharge patients not because their treatment warrants it, but because they are afraid not to. Some patients are returned to prison too soon, drugged instead of counseled, and only rarely given the needed one-on-one therapy. These findings are a result of an 8-month investigation of conditions at psychiatric hospitals run within 4 state prisons.
In national news, the latest ABC Washington Post poll indicates that if an election was held today,